these calls?
Yep, recording started. Yes, I have. And I got to figure out what to do about that.
People are flocking to more of the newer SIGs and stuff. I counted something like 45 interested people in telecom SIG. Okay. I counted, you know, smart contracts. There's not that many. Anything that's highly technical, there aren't that many. But anyway, back to the topic. You were proposing at one point, I think, the some kind of a testnet.
Yes.
And not only just a testnet. Okay, forget the testnet. Testnet, you know, in a public blockchain is easy to do. But in a private setting, you know, each organizational setup probably needs different things. So the point is either you make available a testnet, which was originally proposed like 2 years ago, that the community Linux Foundation had access to VMs that we could all use. That dropped by the wayside because I think that at that point the DLTs were not mature enough to take to make use of that. But I think as the maturity increases, it's important to kickstart that proposal again and to make available infrastructure not available to all and sundry, because there is the whole tension between a private enterprise and the public public good. Many private enterprises are content to sit by on the sidelines, reaping the benefits of open source activity without contributing anything, and then come in and take the stuff at a late stage of maturity, make changes, and keep it for themselves, because the Apache 2 license allows you to do that. But you know, of course, I'm not talking about technology companies mainly, because most of them have realized that open source is the way, and a company like yours, Red Hat, which its DNA itself is rooted in open source, probably behaves differently. But we do need these testnets. How exactly to set it up in this permissionless context is a very difficult thing to solve, but there are some suggestions that I have, which is, one is, you know, make available some bare VM kind of stuff, and then also have something out of the box that helps you set up a configuration and deployment, especially if your K8 stuff comes to fruition, then you know, it'll become much easier across multiple clouds. And then you can have a independently verifiable testnet set up with multiple clients and so on. And then you can actually do measurements.
Yeah, so I've talked to a couple people about this actually recently. One would be Dave Husby. And also, I'm trying to work with, there's a coalition of...
Someone has the phone on. I think it's Cheng Long Yu. Could you put yourself on mute?
Thank you. So I've talked to Dave Husby about this. You know, the TSC's talked about this a couple times off and on. And it's part of it is, you know, what's the use case for them? The other issue that I'm trying to explore is there's a bunch of colleges in the Boston area, in Massachusetts in general, that pool their resources, computing resources, and run a cloud. And Red Hat's been involved in that, and I'm trying to get in touch with them to see about maybe running a test net. It would be good experience for the students, you know, a little bit of mentorship, trying to see if it is appropriate to have it as an internship project even, or if that's, you know, considered by somebody to be a conflict of interest. So I am actively pursuing testnet right now.
Why is it a conflict of interest?
I just want to make sure, you know, hey, if you give us machines, we'll hire someone. You know, it could be construed that way. I just want to, you know, I try to go above and beyond and make sure it doesn't look fishy at all. And I'd rather bring it up than have, you know, someone complain later. So I'm waiting for an answer to that on, you know, from both sides on that. But the other question I would have for this group is, would we want to be involved in a testnet in some way? You know, do we want to run one? Do we want to have anything to do with a testnet? Or is that something I just do through my Red Hat connections and TSC and all that?
Well, we should certainly be interested in a testnet. I don't know, since we are keeping away from implementations, a testnet would be, you know, running a testnet would be, as far as today's stuff is concerned, slightly problematic, or slightly in contrast with our public posture. Let me put it that way. Doesn't mean that we can't change. That's one thing. Second is, we could be contributing thought or systems thinking behind the reason for a testnet and how to actually create one, administer it, and how does it, you know, how can you make sure that it's not slanted towards one enterprise's story or another enterprise's story, and how can we make it a level playing ground for all DLTs, not just Fabric, not just Sawtooth, but anybody inside Hyperledger. And even people who are outside Hyperledger who can, you know, who we can demonstrate are interesting. And I know that some private companies are doing something about it, but it's mostly in the form of read-only for public blockchain, including reading the FabCar, which is a Fabric open.
Yeah, it's a demo. I've run that.
Yeah, but I think it's also available as a constant running thing, or somebody stood it up.
Oh, okay.
Because I know that, for example, Unbounded, which is Jonathan Levy's project, has Explorer that works on all of these, on the public blockchains, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and so on, and on FabCar. And actually, it's interesting because if you get a testnet set up, then we could probably hook the Unbounded into it. And then actually, without writing an Explorer, we could do that. Or we could do REST API on the Unbounded, or on directly on Fabric itself, and integrate it into a UI. I think the integration part is most important. Like, for example, with Caliper, if you can integrate Caliper, the measurement tool, into an actual POC or a pilot, then you can have three things happening there, right? One is you can submit transactions according to your POC. Then you can see the measurements in Caliper, and then you can actually see the transactions hitting the blockchain using an Explorer. I had hoped that the Explorer that was a project brought in first would be cross blockchain, but obviously they haven't done so. They have only done Fabric. And these kind of tools would help you quickly spin up something and integrate the monitoring, the stress testing, the other activities on top of the on top of your POC. Otherwise, a huge amount of time is spent in basically system admin.
Yeah, and that's sort of where, you know, I think, you know, from our perspective, the test that would be for performance and scalability. And then, you know, other people may want interoperability. I think Fabric has an effort underway to make sure that all the Fabric implementations can actually play with each other if they're on the right organizations and channels and stuff. I don't know what Sawtooth is doing in that respect, but I think, you know, a lot of the projects don't necessarily go out and play with each other a lot. So I think there's a lot of things that could be found with test nets, and maybe I'll bring it up for the TSC again. Dave was sort of poking me on that as well. Is it something we want to do? I don't know if, you know, each company contributes two or three machines, public facing machines that could do it. You know, is that sufficient?
That would be a start. Let's dig up the email that was sent out by Brian a couple of years ago. I'll try to do so. And that has to do with setting up a testnet. And at that time, you know, I don't think anybody took them up on their word. And everything is... the problem that I have with this whole development scenario is that each one of, like IBM has their own, you know, IBM blockchain, which is different from the outward facing Fabric.
I thought it was the same as Fabric. I thought they prided themselves in not making changes.
I don't know.
My understanding is they just run the Hyperledger Fabric.
Okay. I mean, if that's the case, that's great. But then there's the Oracle one,
which is
different. So there are variants. Now, if you take the Waterloo guys' implementation and tweak it, Harish may have something to say about that particular thing. Because remember last time I was talking about the microservices architecture and you know, how that would benefit DLT everywhere. But, you know, we got into a slight activity there with Harish about explaining why they left some parts of the infrastructure untouched, and they were only experimenting within each module, and they never messed around with the interfaces because obviously you want compatibility.
Right.
Correct.
Well, they clearly gave the Fabric people some stuff to think about. So
there's also a comment in the TSC when I put it up out there maybe about 3 weeks ago. from Sean, who said that he was surprised by the choices they made. I didn't ask him why he was surprised. What are his comments, basically?
Right. Yeah, Sean, I'll reserve my comments for Sean.
I understand. I mean, you know, he's a partisan of Sawtooth, of course. That's natural. And, you know, many of us are more or less opinionated, depending on our background and our ability to be surprised. Let me put it that way. And whether we think that we know everything.
Yeah.
When
you get to be my age, you realize you forgot everything.
Well, I didn't want to bring the age question in here because, as you know, Mark, we share a similar number of years of experience. Let me put it that way.
All right. So, testnets, we should figure out, you know, and I'll bring it back to the TSC. Dave was poking me on it, so.
I mean, Dave could probably get that stuff done. I think you should get an intern. But, yeah. You know, I cannot commit because I'm desperately trying to survive myself.
Yes, I understand that.
Because I don't want, you know, I freely give of my time in many, many, many activities. At least that's the self delusion that I have, probably. Anyway.
All right. So let me talk to Dave. I mean, the problem with the testnets is we need someone who can commit the hardware. And then it becomes, is it a fabric or is it a sawtooth or is it both and all of that stuff. So I think depending on the hardware. All right.
What about the clouds? Will any of the cloud providers give you free stuff?
I can check. I haven't heard that they will. But, and again, it's, you know, am I doing this as Red Hat or am I doing this as Hyperledger? I think, you know, CNCF is a Linux Foundation thing. I don't know why we can't get time over there. I don't know how the internal accounting goes in within Linux Foundation. So I'll float that again. Maybe we'll do a task force or a special interest group for testnets. Who knows?
I think the idea at that time was, anyway, let me, if I dig up the email, I'll know.
Yeah.
But the point was that we will help them also, meaning the cloud that they provide will be tested by our activity, and we provide them feedback on that.
And I'll see if Red Hat has, I know we do some external playground stuff. I'll see if I can get some of that dedicated. And, you know, at least provide a couple machines. But then it's the whole thing is, you know, do we want this, anyone, a testnet for people to just come kick the tires, or is it more of a, you know, research thing for the different projects to use? And I'd vote for B.
Mm-hmm.
I think a playground would be something different, and you'd have different mechanisms in place for it. So now, how about like caliper? Is caliper doing, Huawei doing anything with, you know, providing test space?
They have other concerns right now.
Yeah. Okay, let's see.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm working with Caliper. I'm the Caliper developer.
Right, I didn't know. I mean, if we had a test net, I'd like to use Caliper as the tool.
Yeah.
To drive it.
So, I know Caliper is a tool to benchmark the blockchain. Hyperledger have another tool to benchmark Fabric. Yes?
I think Fabric has their own tool. That's what I want to find out. But I'd rather standardize on Caliper.
Okay.
And that way we can use Caliper on different platforms, and we know, you know, the tests are the same. All right, so let's see here, based on the agenda. We need to do the introductions because we all know each other. Stack, I haven't heard back yet. I'll follow up one more time. And see, I know they got stuff coming up in like April or May or June. Maybe all 3 months they do talks. So the internship, we talked last week about a couple things. Maybe testnets would be one of them. Did other people have thoughts on how you could use an intern? We talked about maybe testing some use cases for Providence or something, working on that.
You could integrate it with the testnet in the sense that the first thing you could do is try to do Providence.
Well, it's like 8 weeks, right? 8 or 10 weeks, so. Can you get somebody up to speed quick enough to do multiple things?
Well, according to how you write the proposal, it could be one thing.
Right.
Saying, set up a testnet and in order to test the Providence app.
Yeah.
Because you're not setting up the testnet for nothing, right? I mean, and unless you do something with it, you'll never be aware of the problems with it.
Right.
And we could write it up so that it integrates Caliper into it, you know, other things.
Right.
So it could be a multidisciplinary approach. Well, it's not really a multi, you know, in the sense that in order to do performance and scale testing, you got to have a running app.
Right.
You know, you can't just wave your hands in the air and say, this is the TPS or whatever.
Right. Some people do that, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, people do all kinds of stuff.
They're called marketing. All right. And we have till the 8th to get something submitted so we can discuss or do some more proposal on that next week. So the Fast Fabric stuff we sort of talked about already. They can join, well, Christophe or whatever his name is can join next week. And I wasn't going to ask him to do a presentation for us. I was going to ask just to come discuss the work they did. Does that sound... Is that what you people want?
I think what would be interesting would be to ask about further changes, not just what they did.
Okay.
But what he feels could be further changes and how that would be affecting the upgradability of the entire solution, and whether we can feed this back into Fabric as a solid branch that would get updated along with the 2.0 modifications. What are the guarantees you have to break in order to do further further speed ups?
Right.
And what are you losing with the ones that you're speed ups that you have already? What exactly are the guarantees? How much blockchainy stuff do you lose when you do this?
Okay. Harish, what was your take on the paper, having written one recently?
Yeah, so I just read it yesterday. I think most of the changes I thought were actually quite intuitive. In my measurement, actually, I had found those issues, and I was kind of pleasantly surprised to see someone also making changes addressing those issues. So I had also seen the issue that the transmission time from the client to the ordering service was pretty high, but mine was a more end-to-end measurement, and this paper kind of tells me that it was because of the communication between the orderer and the Kafka that was the sort of the bottleneck according to them. So I mean the other changes in the peer where they have put the key value store as a in-memory database rather than having it on the as a regular database also makes a lot of sense to me, from a performance perspective. Yeah, so I do agree with. Of course, the changes related to the cache unmarshalling, where they have too much. The Fabric code has too much overhead between in its internal implementation. Yeah, those are kind of interesting catches, I think. So yeah, overall, I really I like the paper. I think they've done very good changes. From the purely from an implementation perspective, from an experimental metrics perspective, one clear limitation is that there's only one orderer in the paper, right. And you could have multiple orderers. There's nothing from the architecture perspective there's nothing that stops us from that. That is also a limitation with Caliper, at least at the time when I used to use Caliper a couple of months back. Even that had a limitation that it could work with only one orderer. So that's something even I could not overcome. And regarding the limitation of having only one client, I'm not sure. I don't think that should be an issue, assuming the node is powerful enough to launch that much traffic. So I don't really see that as a red flag. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's all good. Like I was telling Vipin earlier, I watched the video, the recording, playback, whatever you want to call it. And there was a question about why they didn't use different orderers. And he said it wouldn't have mattered because the bottleneck's further down anyways. So I got to go back and listen to his comments again and try to understand what they were talking about. I was a little concerned that they just sort of said, well, we don't really need storage. We'll just do a in-memory database for everything. You still need to make sure it gets written to disk, and how you do that is the reliability of your product. So,
but aren't in-memory databases solving that problem already?
Not if your system dies.
Well, sure, but the whole idea is that if you have multiple peers, that you can always recover.
Yeah.
Hopefully, all your peers do not die at the same time.
Aren't all running on the same machine.
Yeah.
Which is someone unplugs.
Yeah. But, okay, coming back to that, you know, the two things that you guys just mentioned. One is the business with the DB. I was thinking that Timescale DB, I don't know whether you're familiar with that, would be a great solution for this, because it's got a lot of characteristics that are very similar to what we need, and I don't think anybody has ever done anything with Timescale DB in this space. It's an append-only database. It's got it's very, very, very heavily worked on for various reasons, because it stores timescale data. So that's one option. I know that Oracle uses Berkeley DB. I don't know memory database, in-memory database is used by the Waterloo folks. I mean, I didn't.
They did their own hash, I think.
Okay.
I think they just sort of did their own hashing. Hash data in memory.
Yeah, the world state, I suppose. I don't know. The world state.
Yeah, they did that for world state because that's the only one they needed to retrieve quickly. And then the other one they just sort of write out when it's ready.
Yeah. So that was the first thing. And in terms of the clients, I have to say something about what Harish said, that having multiple clients will not affect the throughput. This was my initial argument with Dan as well, which is how Fabric scales is not just because you have a single machine and you hit it from a single client, but because of this endorsement policy business and all that other stuff, that having multiple clients and having them submit to different organizations with different endorsement policies might increase the throughput. And I think I've seen that in some paper somewhere. I don't remember exactly where, but the fastest throughput is not just obtained by having a single node with a single client, a single peer, single, you know, whatever you want to call it, operating in Fabric. Because the whole mechanism is very different from a traditional blockchain sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, this paper also nicely does not mention details of the endorsement policy and stuff, actually, which is I think kind of an important detail that was left out, actually. But yeah, I agree with that. If, there are multiple applications running. That's what you're hinting, right? There are multiple applications simultaneously running. Yeah, there could be a possibility of even higher throughput, I think.
I'm not even talking about multiple applications. So suppose you have let's say two organizations mm-hmm. running the same app and endorsing let's say that each of them have three endorsers, and the endorsement policy is that only one endorsement from each organization is needed. So if I'm submitting from client one into organization one and client two into organization two, and I'm doing it as fast as possible, then can't there be a scalability with respect to endorsement between the various organizations? Meaning, if there are one of three is needed from each organization, can't different endorsers from each organization participate in the endorsement and hence make it parallel, sort of? And is that hidden from the client, or the client has to actually submit to the particular endorser? How does it work? Is there an endorsement sort of a facade that directs the transaction to the appropriate endorser, or does it have to be done by hand?
I don't
know. I mean, if the client is aware about the endorsement policy, it can play around with that. The first transaction will be still a valid transaction, when you're mentioning the case, it has an OR of, say, three endorsement. So it essentially needs only one valid endorsement. It can play around with it, and yeah, definitely. Different clients can, say, randomly pick a different endorser. So.
Yeah, but if there is some scaling thing that the client does not have to be actively involved in this, that would be the most incredible thing, because then you don't have to build in that that capability. It's almost like a transaction manager, submission manager or something that sits in between, that would be aware of the of the state of the each of the endorsers. And I don't know how much time is taken in endorsement. It depends, I guess, on the amount of time taken at the endorsers, whether it's
it's a couple of milliseconds. Even for a very simple chain code with a couple of lines of execution, it's a couple of milliseconds.
So it's significant.
Yeah, it is. It's mainly because of the way they have done it. Like, there is a peer and then there is a separate Docker container to execute the chain code. So there's a reasonable amount of overhead everywhere.
So how far did that Kubernetes work get to, Mark?
Well, there's... like a design doc for it. It's definitely, in progress. I think it's scheduled for 2.0. So it's a question of how much rework for other things they want to do as well while they're doing this. So I actually asked Gary about it earlier today. Well, I asked him yesterday, responded this morning, said, yeah, they're monitoring the work, because I had some concerns with some of the stuff going on, just to make sure, because they were talking about doing their own load balancer and stuff like that. And, our project, OpenShift, has a load balancer built in. I put a link to the Jira in there that's tracking all of this. So there's some links to some design papers and stuff through that. But it's coming along, and prefer it to be a little faster, but I'm trying to figure out where I can help. So I need to dig into that a little more. It's a little frustrating. It's I need to start doing more code in my life, I think. All right, so the other thing we have left is discussion on supply chain. And I don't know if it makes sense to do that right now, since it's the same people. you know, I don't know enough about Providence. I need to go learn. So if there's some good links to go look at or something, that would be great. Or do I just Google Providence and supply chain and see what I get? Did that yesterday. It was somewhat interesting.
There is some work in the supply chain. Actually, the trade finance working group. It's very slanted towards trade finance, but there is some stuff on the provenance. There is also, where else did I see work on the supply chain? There is a outfit called MTI.
Okay.
But I'll see what I can dig up on that. But as you know, I was involved in this for a bit since I worked on the Marco Polo project and on the Ultron. But mostly those are trade finance type projects, but their validity rests on the provenance aspect.
Okay.
Anyway.
Ah. Harish just put a link in. Thank you.
Yeah, I just found, this is the only paper, I found this a couple of weeks back, and this is the only paper on provenance and blockchain that I have found so far. I mean, other than just, you know, people mentioning a bunch of keywords, sprinkling a bunch of keywords in their papers on provenance. I think this paper seems to be explaining it quite well.
All right.
I'm yet to read it. So, yeah. So, Vipin, maybe you can also share if you have any other white papers or any other more like solid material that you have come across on provenance and how, as a, you know, as a performance guys, or at least guys interested in performance, can try to understand it from that perspective. So, that will be very useful from measurements perspective. Like, this can give us ideas on what exactly the metrics are could be involved.
So should I let us go a couple minutes early here? Sound good? So next week, Vipin, you're gonna be in Hong Kong, right? Or wherever the...
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't going to this one.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't be either, just, but I am.
Okay.
But, you know, I have a talk scheduled at UBS. In Hong Kong.
All right, cool.
And I'm also meeting with some of the Hong Kong officials.
Awesome. Well, good luck. Happy hunting.
Well, you know, for whatever that is worth. Because they have a project on Hong Kong Stock Exchange.
Okay.
Talking about finance. you know, Stack and all that.
Yeah.
They have a project that is DAH, taking care of post-trade architecture in the...
that in Australia?
That's in Australia, but Hong Kong government also signed something with them in terms of their, what do you call it? Stock Connect, which actually allows you to trade stock in Hong Kong on Shanghai and Shenzhen exchanges. So there is a northbound and a southbound connect. And it is not clear from the press release what exactly DAH is going to provide, but it's something to do with that stock connect, which is a big deal. But I think all of those developments are under a little bit of a retrograde right now because of the situation, political situation, I mean.
Okay.
So I don't know how much. Anyway, we should all take our extra 5 minutes or whatever.
All right. Well, thank you.
Bye.
And safe travels.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.